This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
So is humor enough, or do some GOP lawmakers believe a second special counsel is what it's going to take to get to the bottom of what's happened at the FBI and DOJ? Well, let's ask one of them. Let's bring in New York Republican Congressman Peter King, who also sits on the House Homeland Security Committee. Congressman, great to have you with us tonight.
Thank you, Shannon. Thank you very much.
All right. What do you make of what we heard from the Attorney General today? You heard Ed reporting there that Chairman Goodlatte and Gowdy have said it's a step in the right direction, but they have been very clear. They want a second special counsel. What do you think?
Yeah, historically, I have been opposed to special counsels. However, I did feel this was one situation where it was warranted. I still believe that. Though we're not underestimate what the Attorney General has done. So I'm probably in the same position right now as Trey Gowdy. This is a significant step, and it does show that the Attorney General is considering criminal prosecution here. This is a criminal investigation. That's the terminology he's been using. So this is more than just somebody looking at it. This is an experienced prosecutor looking at very serious allegations, and if I were people at the top levels of the FBI, I'd be very concerned right now. Again, I think a special counsel is the ideal, but I wouldn't write this off. I wouldn't minimize it the way some people are.
All right, here's what the Attorney General said in his letter. He said the appointment of a special counsel by design is reserved for use in only the most extraordinary circumstances. I'm confident that Mr. Huber's review will include a full, complete, and objective evaluation that is consistent with the law and the facts. He noted that since these regulations regarding special counsel went into effect since 1999, there have only been two occasions. Why do you think this rises to the level of making it a third?
Because of the fact that we're talking about top levels in the FBI, the Justice Department, who could potentially be involved, and that makes it then more difficult for somebody within the Department of Justice, including a U.S. attorney, to follow this all the way. Now, again, Mr. Huber apparently is very highly regarded, and again, this is a step forward, but I do think more could be done. But again, I want to give the Attorney General credit here, and I don't want to diminish what he's doing. Also, Shannon, if I can say, you know, there's such a really a web at the top of the FBI and the Justice Department, I think we have to consider even in addition something else, almost like we had in New York, a Knapp Commission, where we get judges and former U.S. attorneys to look at the entire operations as to what went on here at the highest levels of the FBI and the Department of Justice. But I know this is a separate issue, but I just wanted to put that out there because really this is, and I've been a great defender of the FBI, but what we've seen over the last year is, you know, is really distressing. And again, I think let's give Huber a chance on this. Let's not rush to judgment and demand perfection here. I think this is a significant step by the Attorney General.
Well, I think what we're seeing is that Attorney General Jeff Sessions realizes this is a serious problem. For us, who stand in front of a microwave and yell, hurry up, things don't happen fast enough. And so we go to the court of public opinion. And I'm sure at times, whether it is President Trump or any official in government, they have to laugh at some of the commentary on the talk shows because we just don't know everything. We're not privy, and nor should we be. But Jeff Sessions did say last year, or made mention that last year he had he had asked help from somebody outside of the Beltway. Well, he was referencing U.S. Attorney John Huber. And so Huber's been on this since November. So the expectation is that we could probably be hearing something sooner than later. So it would appear that he's down the road much further than what we would expect. And, of course, the proof is in the pudding, as they say, is that if Jeff Sessions is able to come up with, you know, a reasonable and objective report as to what happened and what's going on with the FBI, because, as you know, if there's going to be any true change and a release of all the evil, bad things that seem to be coming out of the FBI, it all starts with an admission. And we've got to admit and understand how deep the problem is, and that's what they're trying to find out right now on behalf of We the People, and we appreciate that. We just need to be patient, right? 5 minutes after the top of the hour, this is Bill Martinez. We are live.
Hey, this is Ricky from Banyan Hill. You like freedom? I do. You like money? I do, too. If you like freedom and money, then you're going to love Freedom Checks. You see, over the next few months, an estimated $34.6 billion is up for grabs to anyone who stakes their claim. Yep, you heard that right. $34.6 billion. To get all the details, just go to www.AmericanFreedomChecks.com. Thousands of people are already lined up to cash in. Take Doug, for example. He's a 46-year-old from Joplin, Missouri, who's set to get a check for $24,075. And if Doug can do this, I've got a hunch that you can, too. But here's the thing. If you want the chance to grab your full fair share of this $34.6 billion payout, you must have your ducks in a row by May 1st. So don't wait. Get over to www.AmericanFreedomChecks.com before May 1st. That's www.AmericanFreedomChecks.com.
Bill Martinez.
And I will wait for you.
It's Bill Martinez live.
Minutes after the top of the hour, Bill Martinez here. For more information on the show, you can go to BillMartinezLive.com. It is all right there. You know, Christianity could have easily become the forgotten sect of Judaism. Instead, it spread at a mind-boggling pace, converting some 30 million people in just four centuries. This is something that has been quite pondersome for our next guest, Bart Ehrman, New York Times best-selling authority on early Christianity. Bart, this has been something that's been running through your mind now for over 30 years, is that how could Christianity spread so quickly?
Well, it's an amazing story. According to the New Testament, right after Jesus' death, there were 11 of his men disciples and a handful of women, so about 20 people who came to believe he got raised from the dead. These were lower class, illiterate peasants from a rural part of a remote area of the empire, and these 20 people convinced so many others that within 400 years, Christianity had become the official religion of the entire Roman Empire, with half of the population, 30 million people, subscribing to it. And so, yeah, it's an astounding story.
Well, when you think about it, even up on that final day, 40 days after Jesus' departure, when you had Pentecost, I'm kind of fast-forwarding here a little bit, you had some over 280 people in that room. So there was still, you know, as they were going through the shock of their leader being crucified, then it was, okay, you know, pulling things back, you know, back together and laying their lives on a line in such a way that it had to be a bit compelling for those near what was happening here.
Well, what I argue in the book is that without the belief in the resurrection, you never would have had Christianity, because Jesus himself was a Jewish teacher who followed the Jewish law and kept Jewish customs, and he understood himself to have the right understanding of the God of the Jews. And if his followers hadn't come to believe in the resurrection, they would have remained a sect within Judaism. They'd be a kind of Judaism, but it's the belief in the resurrection soon after his death that ends up making this into the kind of religion that it became.
Exactly. Bart Ehrman is with us, New York Times best-selling authority on early Christianity. We're talking about his new book, The Triumph of Christianity. And as you say, Bart, Jesus was Jewish. I mean, he knew all the traditions. He knew the Old Testament, referenced it many times throughout his ministry.
Well, that's right. And so, you know, I don't think that Jesus himself was planning on starting a new religion. And I think his followers, after his death, understood that they understood him to be the Jewish Messiah, sent from the Jewish God to the Jewish people in fulfillment of the Jewish scriptures. If you want to be a follower of Jesus, you got to be Jewish, which meant that if anybody converted to be a follower of Jesus, if they were a man, if they weren't Jewish already, they had to get circumcised, and they had to start observing the Sabbath and keeping kosher. And so this started out as a kind of Judaism.
And then, of course, you've got the divide, as you do throughout the history of Christianity, as you get those points of conflict that occur between, you know, the reigning institution of the time, the Pharisees and Sadducees, the religious leaders, and believing that there was no way that Jesus was the Messiah, because in their own mind, they thought Jesus should be able, you know, be a different type of king, more of a worldly king than a spiritual king. Is that not true?
Well, that's right. I mean, there were a variety of understandings of what the Messiah would be within Judaism, but all of these various understandings thought that the Messiah would be a figure of grandeur and power. He'd be someone who destroyed the enemies and set up Israel as a sovereign state in the land and would rule Israel as the king in Jerusalem. And then the Christians came along and said that Jesus is the Messiah. Mm-hmm. Most Jews thought this was crazy, because everyone knew Jesus had been arrested for crimes against the state, he had been humiliated, and he'd been publicly tortured to death. And so he was just the opposite of what people thought a Messiah would be. So that the Christian claims about Jesus not just fell on deaf ears, but it was understood to be ludicrous by most Jews at the time.
Exactly. And, of course, then what follows is, you know, Rome targeting the Jews, burns down the temple, then targets, you know, the Way, the group of the Way, this new religious movement. They're lighting them up as human torches on Nero's driveway, and you've got Nero's circus and all that taking place as well. So is it any wonder that Christianity could survive in the early years with that kind of persecution?
Well, so I have a chapter on persecution in the book, and you know, there were times and places where Christians were severely persecuted, including during that one incident in Rome under Nero, about 35 years after Jesus' death. One of the things about the persecutions is that the persecutions early on were sporadic and occasional. It wasn't illegal to be a Christian in most parts of the empire. It was perfectly fine, but there were times and places where Roman authorities said, no, you have to worship the Roman gods. You can worship your god if you want to, but you have to also worship our gods, because our gods have made our state great, so that if you don't worship our gods, it's a kind of a political statement. And so there were times when Christians were persecuted, but it didn't halt the growth of the Christian movement.
And then what was the pivotal change for Christianity historically that really caused it to expand exponentially?
Yeah, I would say there are several causes, but when I went into writing the book, my first idea was the one that I think most people have, which is that the reason Christianity took off was because the Emperor Constantine converted. In the early 4th century, Constantine was the emperor. He was a pagan, worshipped many gods, and he became a Christian. And I had always thought, well, that's what made the difference. What I try to show in the book is that turns out probably not to be true, that at the rate Christianity was growing at the time, it almost certainly would have taken over the empire anyway, whether Constantine converted or not. It's not that you need massive conversions and you don't need the Emperor Constantine. What you need are Christians converting others at a fairly steady rate of growth.
Right. What was it about Christianity that, you know, drew people in? I mean, throughout all the persecutions, the philosophical conflicts of whether or not Jesus was man or God or both, what was it that transcended all that and drew people into, you know, belief and following Christianity?
What I argue in the book is that to understand why pagans would want to convert to Christianity, you have to understand why pagans were religious in the first place. Pagans were religious, well, for a range of reasons, but mainly it was because life was so hard and they needed help to survive it. Most people were not religious because of an afterlife. They were religious because this life was so difficult to survive. So, I mean, they were living in a world where if it doesn't rain this year, your village will starve to death next year.
Right.
If you get sick, there's no way to get well. If you get a tooth abscess, it will kill you. The gods can provide things that humans can't provide for themselves. They can make sure it rains. They can make sure the crops grow and the livestock multiply. They can heal the sick. So the gods are worshipped in order to provide divine benefits, and the Christians argued that their God was more powerful than the pagan gods.
Exactly.
They didn't have to convince masses of people at once, but they convinced some people, and eventually then they took over the empire.
He's New York Times bestselling author Bart Ehrman. His new book, Triumph of Christianity, that is the topic of our discussion. It will continue right after this.
The answer to being in control of your own healthcare is freedom from insurance. Become part of a group of self-pay patients that come together to share in each other's medical expenses. Individual share amounts begin at $107 a month and $347 for families. Choose from three health sharing programs. Holistic treatments may be eligible for sharing. See guidelines. Discount programs available for dental, vision, and pharmacy. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
It's about time something new came along for better selling and buying online. And I found it.
What now, Marge?
It's buysellmakeoffer.com.
Never heard of it.
It's a brand new company. That's why you've never heard of it. It's the newest and best way to sell any products online. I did all the research.
Sell my car?
Yes.
Our home?
Yep.
My golf bag?
Your golf clubs. All of them.
How about your purse collection hoard?
Hey, now.
You said any product.
Right. I did.
Hmm.
We get 30 days free.
Really?
Packages starting from only $9.95. And buysellmakeoffer.com will never charge item fees, ever.
Hmm.
Never. And this is cool. Listen to this. You can even use Skype or video to show your items.
That's cool.
Yes. All we have to do is go to the website, sign up, and then load our stuff to sell. I love this site.
Buysellmakeoffer.com.
Buysellmakeoffer.com. You got it?
Buysellmakeoffer.com.
Buysellmakeoffer.com. Better selling, better buying.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNloans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNloans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNloans.com. That's GCNloans.com.
Tired of being censored by Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Patreon? Well, now you don't have to be. OneWay.com is the free speech and human-friendly social network built just for you. Stop feeding the beast. Every post you make on those evil, anti-human, anti-American perverted sites helps them destroy our families, our country, and our souls. Join OneWay today and take back your liberty. Your free speech alternative is waiting for you at OneWay.com. OneWay.com.
With uncertain times in the United States, it's only prudent to consider storing precious metals in a safe place outside of our borders. At Miles Frank Limited, we have done just that for you. Partnered with the most respected storage company in the industry, Miles Frank Limited is proud to offer the only fully insured private safe deposit box system in North America, held in Vancouver and Toronto. Send us your previously purchased precious metals, or have one of our brokers help you purchase something new. Questions? Please call one of our experienced brokers at 866-485-4346. Solid foundational storage partnered with the most respected name in security. That's Miles Franklin Limited. Celebrating our 29th year in business without ever receiving a customer complaint. Call us at 866-485-4346. Again, that's 866-485-4346. Miles Franklin Limited. A name you can trust.
Fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. I'm talking thick, meaty, center-cut, presidential bacon. Savory and delicious. I buy some, I use some, I store some. Awesome. No refrigeration needed with a 10-year shelf life. NASA pack technology. Bacon. Fully cooked, fully hydrated, ready-to-eat right from the pack bacon. Or warm and serve. Life-saving, ready-to-eat bacon. 10-year shelf life bacon. Ships free at fullycookedbacon.com. Fullycookedbacon.com.
Till I am a soul on fire. Till I am a soul on fire.
Your program, your calls, your opinions. Bill Martinez, live.
Back with the New York Times bestselling author. Bart Ehrman is with us. We're talking about his brand new book, Triumph of Christianity. Bart, did you find that, you know, we were talking about pagans, you know, in their conversion to Christianity. But do we get back down to the basis that people are going to worship something? It's in our innate behavior to worship a god of some sort?
Certainly in the ancient world, there were virtually no atheists. Everybody knew that there were gods, lots of gods. The only ones who didn't think there were lots of gods were Jews and then Christians. And so everybody knew there were lots of gods. What made it interesting in the ancient world was that since everybody worshipped many gods, there was no sense that one religion was right and the others were wrong. A variety of religions could be right. And so if you started adapting new religious practices, you didn't have to give up your old practices. Mm-hmm. Or if you started worshiping a new god, you didn't have to stop worshiping the old gods until Christianity came along. Christians said, we're right. There's only one God. You can only worship him. If you turn to this God, you can't worship any of the others. And that's one of the reasons Christianity ended up taking over the empire, mm-hmm. because it was the only religion that was destroying the other religions in its wake, because it was the only religion that was pressing its exclusivistic claims.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's the reason, you know, when you think about Christianity taking over the Roman Empire, that's why it matters so much, right?
Well, it is. I mean, what ends up happening is Christianity is not growing by leaps and bounds at first. It just is growing at, you know, the converted few people here and there, probably at about a rate, I tried to show in the book, it's probably about a rate about 3% a year. Mm-hmm. So if there are 100 people who are Christian this year, next year there may be 103. You do that over time, and since you're an exclusive religion, you're not only bringing people into Christianity, you're taking them away from paganism. Mm-hmm. And that means that over time, Christianity is advancing while the other religions are shrinking.
And then you also have, lest we forget, Judaism. And so this divide between Judaism and Christianity to become different religions, it was all about Jesus, right? Whether they were going to accept Jesus or not. Was that the divide?
Yeah, that was the initial divide, is that Christians were saying that Jesus is the Jewish Messiah, and Jews were saying there's no way he could be the Messiah, he's a crucified criminal. And so that brought about the divide originally, and then they develop in different lines, and Christianity becomes a Gentile religion, a religion open to non-Jews who didn't have to convert to Judaism. And before the end of the first century was over, most of the people coming into Christianity came from pagan roots rather than Jewish roots.
Now, were there other things that were contributory to people's conversion here? I mean, not only some spiritual satisfaction becoming a Christian, but was there something beneficial in terms of the culture that Christianity was demonstrating versus the other religions?
There have been a lot of discussion about this among scholars. Some scholars have thought that, for example, that the idea of the Christian community was attractive to people, that within the Christian church, unlike in pagan religions, people met every week, and they called one another brother and sister, and they supported each other, and they prayed for each other, and they shared their resources, and that the community aspect might have brought people in, and that's possible. It is striking that when you read what the sources actually say, from starting with the New Testament, but going up to the 2nd, 3rd, 4th centuries, what they say is that what's converting people are demonstrations of divine power, the miracles that people are working in the name of the God of Jesus, and that's the main thing leading to conversions.
No doubt. Miracles and wonders continued post the resurrection, as you said earlier. That was, in fact, the ultimate miracle. If you could obliterate, the fact that the resurrection did not occur. We know Josh McDowell tried to do that, and in the process of trying to convince himself the resurrection factor was a lie, as a result, in trying to prove it was a lie, he started believing.
Well, you know, the early Christians didn't use the kind of proofs of the resurrection that someone like Josh McDowell would do. What they would say was that, look, Jesus died, and Paul saw him alive afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was raised from the dead. And they didn't convince masses of people. They only had to convince a few people. Mm-hmm. But over time, if you convince a few people and these people have to leave their old religion to accept this religion, then the other religion starts failing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how it ended up happening. But it absolutely is because of belief that Jesus really was raised from the dead.
Well, not only Paul, but after his resurrection, there were reports that hundreds of people saw Jesus in various places, did they not?
Well, in the Gospels, you don't have hundreds of people seeing Jesus. You have the followers of Jesus seeing him.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, in one place in 1 Corinthians, mentions that there were 500 people who saw him at once, but he doesn't give us any information about that.
That's what I'm referring to.
The
right.
Records for that. Yeah.
So, but obviously, no doubt, people having, you know, either seen Jesus afterwards, you know, going in and seeing a tomb that was before sealed up. And, of course, as we know, according to Roman law, that those guards were going to be subject to death because they lost the body of Jesus Christ. And, of course, the ruling religious leaders at the time knew of Jesus's prediction or his prophecy that he would be raised in 3 days, and they were afraid that maybe his followers would steal the body and promote a big hoax upon you know, the Jewish people and the world.
Well, that's what the Gospel of Matthew says. So, you know, one of the tasks that biblical scholars have is determining how accurate these accounts are. I mean, are they literally what happened, or are they later reflections some decades later? And so it's a very interesting question. You don't get the guards posted at the tomb, for example, in any of the other Gospels, or the idea that the disciples may have stolen the body. It all comes from the Gospel of Matthew, which is, of course, written about 50 or 60 years after the events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing about the Gospels, written, I mean, that was about the closest contact to the resurrection of Christ, his ministry, in terms of documented history, correct?
Well, the Gospels are the only accounts we have of Jesus rising from the dead and the tomb being empty. Paul himself doesn't say anything about an empty tomb, and these are the only narratives that we have.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they're written, you know, many decades later by people who are not living in Palestine. I mean, the authors of the Gospels are Greek-speaking Christians living decades later. No suggestion that they actually lived in Israel. They're actually writing in a different language from Jesus and his disciples, and so they're decades later by people who weren't there, and so that's why biblical scholars have to wrestle with trying to figure out what actually happened.
Well, Bart, for 30 years, you've been mulling this question of Christianity in your head, and I'm sure you were up many times at 3 o'clock in the morning pondering the question. Now that you've written The Triumph of Christianity, can you sleep through the night?
I sleep just well. I sleep perfectly well, and I actually never lost any sleep over this one. This is a story for me that is historically extremely important, but it's not one that I puzzle about much. I think we understand now how it all happened.
Yeah, exactly. So the big takeaway for the people that get their hands on your book, and they should get their hands on your book. This is great scholarship, and you know, I appreciate all the hard work that you put into this in The Triumph of Christianity. What do you want the audience to get from your book?
I think people need to realize that when Christianity took over the Roman world, it became the religion of the West, which means it became the religion, the dominant religion of all of Western civilization. And our entire culture cannot be understood apart from the Christian influence, whether you're a Christian or not. And so seeing how Christianity actually did it makes a huge difference for understanding our own heritage.
Well, Bart Ehrman, thank you again for being with us here on Bill Martinez Live, New York Times bestselling authority on early Christianity. Bart Ehrman on Bill Martinez Live. Thank you, Bart.
Thank you.
Easter right now at Kohl's. and take an extra 20% off with promo code Easter. With an extra 20% off, girls' Carter's dresses are just $17.60. Van Heusen dress shirts are $27.99. Elsie Lauren Conrad dresses are also just $27.99. And Samsonite carry-on luggage is $103.99. Plus, you'll get Kohl's cash right now at Kohl's. Select styles. Offers valid March 29th through 31st. Some exclusions apply. See store or Kohl's.com for details.
If you want term life insurance, call Life Quotes. We guarantee you the lowest prices, or we will pay you $500. Plus, get up to $1 million in term life insurance with no medical exam. You do need term life insurance. Call Life Quotes now.
800-915-9164. 800-915-9164. 800-915-9164.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
It's been said, any society is only 3 missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And a crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a 4-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
With your revival.
Welcome back, America. Bill Martinez here. For more information on the show, you can go to BillMartinezLive.com. Our next guest, I've been chasing him down for the last couple of weeks. We kept running, you know, by each other in the hallways in Nashville, Tennessee at NRB. And so now here we are both on the West Coast, and we finally connect here. David A.R. White is with us. David, welcome back. We've been with you all along the way, starting with God's Not Dead, number one, and now here we are to number three.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me. And sorry if you had to chase me.
Hey, I know you've been busy, and with all the publicity and demand of this long-anticipated third installment of God's Not Dead. But before we get into that, you know, I was curious. I don't know why I didn't pick this up earlier in your background, but how does a young man at the age of 19 from a Mennonite farming town outside of Dodge City, Kansas, end up in Hollywood at the age of 19? How did that happen?
Yeah, you know, I'm a firm believer that God puts these dreams in our hearts. You know, it's just a matter of, well, how do you know if that dream that's inside of you, from an early age or even wherever you're at right now is from him, and if you're supposed to pursue it. And I remember sitting on a tractor in the middle of a wheat field and had this dream to go into the entertainment industry, and I couldn't shake it. And of course, I grew up Mennonite. So my dad was a Mennonite pastor. I saw one movie in the theater the first 18 years of my life. You know, the joke is kind of like, well, the Mennonites make the Mormons look like a pack of Hell's Angels. I mean, I grew up conservative, you know, and so I was the last person on the planet that should have went into the entertainment industry. But I couldn't shake that that call, so to speak, from mm-hmm. the Lord. And so, you know, here I am. I moved here when I was 19 and jumped right in without knowing anybody. And God really paved the way. Obviously, it wasn't easy all the mm-hmm. time, but I do believe that, you know, if there's a dream inside of you, then, you know, that you can't let go of and it's bigger than you, then go for it, you know, commit it to the Lord and go for it.
Exactly. And he'll give you the desires of your heart. You talk about the belly of the beast right there in the eye of the storm, Hollywood, and, you know, going through the process, learning the craft. What did your family think as you were making this move?
All of my family had gone to Moody Bible Institute and met their significant others there and graduated. And so I did the same. I went there for a year like my father had wanted me to go study the Bible and right after high school. And so that was a big call that I had to make to my parents and say, hey, Dad, I want to leave Bible school and I want to go to Hollywood to be an actor. I think the next thing I said was, hello. But my parents said, you know, David, as long as you serve the Lord and whatever you do, then we support mm-hmm. you, which, you know, I hope I'm able to tell my kids that. And they had instilled the love of Jesus inside of me from an early age. And I think that they just trusted that, you know, that I was going to seek him in it. And even though they didn't understand it, that they would trust that and trust the Lord in that. And, you know, and I thank them for that. You know, I'm thankful that they did that.
And then you start your own company, PureFlix Entertainment. You gave us, of course, God's Not Dead, the first installment, which, you know, lit up the world. I mean, it was incredible, and it was quite the statement and turning point for your career, was it not?
It was. You know, my path is a little bit different than, you know, God had allowed me to go into mainstream television when I first got out here. I was on a television show for quite a while, and then I did a bunch of other television shows. And in the process, though, he slowly introduced this Christian film industry to me as an actor first, and then mm-hmm. gave me a heart to produce it, you know. And in 2005, after several years of making films, and even I think going through this time of we felt like, you know, that our call was then to make a faith-based distribution company. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you would have that we wouldn't be stopped by the studios. We didn't want faith-based content, but that we needed to do this. And so once again, you know, that was a bigger dream that was bigger than me and three guys in a garage starting, you know, PureFlix basically. Yeah. So 2005 we started that, and it's been, you know, we spent a lot of years just trying to figure the business out. So by the time we got to God's Not Dead, you know, we had certainly worked for quite a while. I think we were maybe in our eighth, ninth year, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The industry at that point really was closed to pretty much to faith movies. They didn't really care about it. It was almost like we had gone into this non-existent world of, you know, this sidebar world that they didn't, you know, they didn't respect that there was a Christian film marketplace. Mm-hmm. Or genre, or that anybody even had a desire to see these films. And so, you know, God's Not Dead comes out. It was this little movie that we shot for, $1.2 million, which for us was a big deal, but for in Hollywood standards was the smallest little independent movie you can think of.
Right.
And it came out, and that Monday morning, you know, we had to do everything to get it to the theaters. It was our first big theatrical. We had to almost mortgage our company to make it happen. But we believed that this was supposed to go in there. And it was just one more testament of God's faithfulness to us. Mm-hmm. And that Monday morning, Hollywood called, you know, and the big two questions were, first of all, who in the world is PureFlix? And what is God's Not Dead?
Yeah.
And exactly. Yeah, and the movie went on to break a ton of records and stayed in the theaters, number one independent live action movie that year, and just, you know, and so here we are. It's interesting that movie ended up opening out. Everybody had this question: well, now what are you going to do? Thinking that we were going to bail out of the Christian film market because you've achieved something, and now you can just go your own, you know, right. Do what you really wanted to do all along. And for us, we've always loved that, you know, this genre, and we always mm-hmm. felt like this is what we were supposed to do, and we had a heart for the Lord in this thing. And so we just grew PureFlix with the in and expanded around the world and started doing more and more theatricals and just trying to make a difference in our culture today.
Exactly.
And here we are at the third installment of God's Not Dead, and I'm super proud of this, but I also feel like it is, you know, it took us a long time to figure out what this next movie would be about and to make sure that we weren't just doing another movie to do another movie.
Exactly. Well, tell us about it. We got about a minute and a half left, maybe 2 minutes if we stretch it out a little bit. God's Not Dead 3, which is coming to theaters this Easter weekend.
Well, it's all about, you know, the tagline is a light in darkness. And there's no doubt about it. You know, this last decade has been this one of dark social, political, divisive times. And so how do you do, you know, the line, the Reverend Dave's line, the first couple of films was always, God is good all the time, and all the time God is good. But how do you react when things aren't good in our lives? How do we act as believers, I play this everyday pastor whose church is burned down, my best friend dies. It's just a horrible experience. And then all of a sudden the school that my parents had helped build that was turned over to the state later now decides the church isn't relevant anymore. We don't need the church anymore. And so all this stuff comes up against me in this movie. And of course, no movie would be complete without the pastor calling his brother for help who happens to be an atheist. And so chaos ensues. Well. And we go back to the college campus with Shane Harper again. There's the lead girl in this movie is questioning her faith, like how, you know, things haven't been good in her life. Does God even exist? All of a sudden she's surrounded on this campus where no one believes. And it has strains from the first one where we come at it, you know, definitely it's a youth-oriented movie. And at the same token, we deal with these really heavy questions about, is God good all the time? Is God really faithful in the midst of our lives when things aren't good or right or even fair?
Exactly. Well, David, congratulations on the movie. They can go to godsnotdead.com. Are we going to hashtag on the way out the door as well?
All I ask is, you know, make sure you show up this weekend. You know, we come out on Good Friday. And I think it will be a good Friday for you when you go there. And bring your friends, your Christian friends, your non-Christian friends, your kids. It's just a great conversation starter piece. And people are saying this is the best one yet. So
wow. Can't wait. God's Not Dead 3, A Light in the Darkness. David A.R. White on Bill Martinez Live. David, God bless. Thank you so much. Happy Easter.
Thanks, Bill.
Get ready for Easter right now at Kohl's and take an extra 20% off with promo code Easter. With an extra 20% off, Girls Carter's dresses are just $17.60. Van Heusen dress shirts are $27.99. Elsie Lauren Conrad dresses are also just $27.99. And Samsonite carry-on luggage is $103.99. Plus, you'll get Kohl's cash right now at Kohl's. Select styles. Offers valid March 29th through 31st. Some exclusions apply. See store or kohls.com for details.
Sometimes all it takes is a spark. The spark becomes a flame. It transforms everything around it.
From the creators of The Case for Christ.
All these years, this church has been here. Now it's the crime scene.
The church has brought nothing but controversy to the school for years.
When we are divided,
we cannot respond to hate with more hate.
You don't get to play innocent.
You did this!
We must remember what we stand for.
It's okay to be broken, Dave. It means God's still shaping you.
My God's not dead. He's surely alive. He's living.
In the darkness, we are called to be the light.
How do you define truth exactly?
I believe truth is a person.
This Easter,
as painful and confusing as all of this is, it just might be exactly where God wants you right now.
Father, come shake the... God's Not Dead, A Light in Darkness, starring David A.R. White and John Corbett. Rated PG, parental guidance suggested. Now playing. Go to godsnotdead.com.
Filling an opening at your company means more than just finding an employee. You're looking for a fit, a match. Robert Half understands that. We know you need someone who can do the work, someone who complements your culture. And, of course, you need that someone fast. When it all comes together, it makes for a perfect fit. Satisfaction guaranteed. Robert Half, the matching experts in accounting, finance, IT, legal, marketing, and administrative staffing. Visit roberthalf.com/radio for more information.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Are you still looking for that one iodine that you can really trust? A medical doctor-endorsed product that is backed by honest research and true integrative science? Then search no further. Go to NutraMedical.com for Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutriodine, proven time and time again to be the very best iodine available for you. Nutriodine is the only Tesla-activated monatomic plasma iodine in the world. It optimizes mitochondrial function and generation of new mitochondria from totally neutral. Neutralizing the venom from a desert recluse spider bite in Southern California to eliminating malaria parasites reported by medical missionaries in Central India. Dr. Bill's Nutriodine is simply the most powerful healing formula there is. Nutriodine clears the body of all known pathogens, restores it to an alkaline state, and even promotes stem cell regeneration. Order Dr. Bill's Nutriodine today at 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com.
Hear that? That's the sound of a house being trashed while a gang of thieves ransack the place. And what they don't steal will be destroyed.
This year, resolve not to be the next victim of a break-in. Go to faketv.com and discover a device that creates the illusion someone inside is watching TV, even when you're miles away. Security is a mindset, and Fake TV should be part of your security solution. Be vigilant, but not fearful. faketv.com.
Someone once said, live free or die. Right? Bill Martinez, live. Bill Martinez, live.
We're back with you, America. Bill Martinez here, 14 minutes before the top of the hour. We got a real treat coming up for you. We are absolutely honored and privileged to have Jim Caviezel with us. He's just about ready to come in here. As you can imagine, everybody would love to be talking to him, and we are blessed to have Jim Caviezel here. We're going to talk about his new movie, Paul, Apostle of Christ. Jim, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. Good to have you with us. It's such an honor to have you here.
Thank you very much.
You know, you and I have a lot in common. I mean, you wanted to play in the NBA. I can tell you, if I'd have been anywhere close to 6 foot, I'd have been there. You know, I love basketball, and I know you grew up loving basketball as well.
I did. I played 15 years, and every day, and my dad played for John Wooden at UCLA.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I had a brother that was a player of the year, the state of Washington, and was highly recruited, but it was the discipline that I learned physically that helped me to be able to play Jesus in the Passion, just as far as being in the low stance. Mel Gibson goes, "Hey Jim, how are you going to play Jesus up there on the cross? You know, you got to get in a real squat there with your leg." And I said, "Well, I play basketball,
right.
So I just do wall squats and got my right leg really strong, and I was able to hold it for about 12 minutes in each take."
Well, you know, that the whole situation of you, and I know you've talked about it because everybody, especially people of faith, want to know about that experience. And I've heard you talk about, you know, being, you know, scourged by accident underneath and how that affected you. And that was just, you said that was just one stripe. I mean, and imagine what Jesus went through in that scene is just so powerful.
Yes. Yeah. There was a, you know, if we had it went from, accident, sorry, we, you know, a shoulder separation, that was an accident, and then the cold. Mel had probably, you know, had this plan for about maybe 8 weeks, but no more than 12, and it went on for 5.5 months.
Wow.
So the cold was not planned for. The cross, where it was located near a canyon, like the Grand Canyon, a smaller version of it, but in Italy there. And the wind would come up at maybe, you know, 5 knots, spill over, and then suddenly it'd go up to 30 knots, 25 mm-hmm. knots, and it would, that whip would hit the beam, and it would cause my shoulder to separate. Then the cold hit, and the pneumonia got there. I was on antibiotics, and there wasn't enough rest in the day to recover. The makeup was burning my skin. It was a new application that they didn't use. But had we had done this movie in a studio, you'd never seen that performance.
Exactly. As you were going through this, I mean, what are you thinking? Are you thinking, well, you know, this is probably minor compared to what Jesus actually was subjected to, right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Except at the end of the lightning strike.
Yes.
You know, that was, you know, very, it was unusual because it was a fifth take in the last take of the entire film.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly heaven opened up and I got split in half. And, you know, it caused me to have two heart surgeries you know, physical issues. I have no problems now. I'm lucky.
Thank God,
but,
yeah.
You know, it did require, it certainly appreciated what our Lord gave for us, but the how far we went with that was quite extensive, and it was certainly worth the amount of conversions, the millions and millions of conversions.
Yes,
that
amen.
Happened.
Yeah.
And we will do the same with the resurrection.
Exactly. And talk about the resurrection.
Well, I can just tell you this much. It will be the biggest single film in history. Let me tell you that.
Well, stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We will have details. And 14 years after Passion of the Christ.
Yes.
You feel the hand of, you know, throughout the shooting and everything. God had a definite plan, and you were on His plan on this. Did you just finally just have to surrender to that and feel like we're just doing what God's called us to do here?
At first, it was like, okay, you know, this is a role. You just try to simplify it, but it wasn't just any role.
Mm-hmm.
This was going to be harder than Hamlet. This was going to be something that. Everybody loves or hates this guy,
yeah.
And the hate was very difficult. But you can't take things personal if you're going to do that. I didn't think I was the right guy for the role.
Mm-hmm.
But a friend of mine told me, you know, hey, Jim, God doesn't always choose the best, but He chose you. So what are you going to do about it, you know?
Right.
And at some point, I know Faulkner's used this, but I said this back in the day, is that I don't want the world to see me. I only want them to see Jesus.
Yes, amen. Yeah.
And that ultimately is what I wanted in the film, that the world would have an experience of with their Savior. And that was, it caused, you know, at first it was, yes, I felt God's love, but when I went deeper with Him, I felt in my heart how much the world does not love Him, and how alone He is, and how every day, imagine having a baby, and that baby, when he grew up, didn't love you back.
Right, exactly.
And I can't imagine that, but that's what I felt in my heart on that cross.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to ask you about how this personally impacted you. And so it's the sense of loneliness and this connection and understanding of how lonely, in, you know, especially at that moment in time when we hear the cry, why have you forsaken me?
You know, people that come to you that say, you know, Jesus, they call you Jesus, or in my industry they call you Jesus.
Mm.
You know, one of it's good and one of it's not so good. But even when people, I'm not Jesus, but in a way, I'm part of who he is. Jesus said, I'm the vine, you are the branches. And so I am a part of him. He's a part of me, and he speaks through me. And when he says, I'm a father, one and the same, those that know me know my father, I want him to be more committed, and I want to be more committed to him. I want us to be closer, because I'm the best Jim there ever was when he's in my heart.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But at the heart, the suffering of it is you get to see how people hate him.
Yeah.
And, Jesus says, if the world hates you, know it hated me first.
Yeah.
I get to feel that. It's like walking around with a stigmata.
You know?
But it's okay, because at the same time, I get to defend him.
Yeah.
And I love, because I love him.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, experientially, you're very intimate with God as a result of that, in a whole unique and special way. I can sense that, Jim. Jim, let's talk about Paul, Apostle of Christ. How did this come about?
Paul, Apostle of Christ. Well, simply, you know, I was asked, well, this is the only other religious film you've done since The Passion. And I said, look, it's the only great script that I read since The Passion. And I don't turn down great material.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Hyatt wrote a great a piece here, but what hit me about it was the controversial message. There is a mega controversy in this movie, and that is the controversy of forgiveness. And forgiveness is in our Lord's teaching is forgiving at all cost, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And that I had was at a film with a friend who does not believe in God.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned to me and he said, wow, whoever wrote this, he's a great philosopher. And I said, you mean the director? How he wrote, I've never heard anything like that. And I said, that's in the Bible. He goes, well, I don't know anything about the Bible.
Mm.
He goes, well, that's the power of what this thing has. This guy had a conundrum going on in his head,
mm-hmm.
or in his heart, and turned around and he just had glaze in his eyes.
Mm.
And, that is our Lord has came to us and showed us his love. And that's why we converted,
mm-hmm.
because he loves us. Oftentimes, even the modern day Christian does not give love to those that do not believe.
Right.
So it's almost become an exclusive club. This is not Christianity.
Yeah, exactly.
This is not what our Lord wants.
Mm-hmm.
Forgiving does not mean passivity. It does not mean weakness. It means being able to meet evil face to face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And understanding, as C.S. Lewis said, that we haven't met any mere mortals. That every person that God has created, it's for a purpose, a divine purpose. And they're a gift in and of themselves. But if we reject them, what do we lose? At what loss, Jim?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, think of it this way, as you more to what you're saying, these are God's children,
mm-hmm.
that are lost.
Exactly.
Why are they to blame for generations, previous generations? They're so lost.
Mm-hmm.
I always go back to It's a Wonderful Life, that movie.
Yes.
Where here is a man thinking of a guy like that. That, I'm worthless. He's always tried to do the right thing, but it just doesn't quite work out. And an angel comes and saves him. I had many angels that have saved me. In fact, when people said, "How did you play Jesus?" I said, "Those angels in my life, those people represented Jesus to me, and they were from every denomination I can imagine, and they are the ones that represented me on that cross." And so I just simply. They were my teachers.
Exactly.
And at some point, as I refer to Billy Graham here, he was our shepherd. He became a living, walking Christ for many of us. And now he's gone.
I tried other brands, but I came back to my sunshine.
For the best hot or cold pain relief, get the best. Get a Sunny Bay heating pad.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck or back or shoulder.
And the best relief for that pain is a Sunny Bay heating pad. Did you know that the American College of Physicians said that one of the best ways to treat muscle pain is heat therapy? Sunny Bay heating pads are handmade with high quality, can be used at home or at work, and have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy.
Why take another pill?
Many people use our Sunny Bay heating pads alone and got rid of the neck pain.
Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body.
See why our homegrown small business at sunny-bay.com has tried to help people just like you. Get your Sunny Bay heating pads at sunny-bay.com. That's sunny-bay.com or call 253-678-1361. For hot and cold therapy, sunny-bay.com.